Welcome to the Morning Edge. I am Floyd J. Winters. Today is May 11th, 2015, and here is Augie.
Good morning, Tampa Bay. Well, it's a good morning for Manatee County. Manatee County is looking at Cuba much more closely, but a lot of people are. And we have in our studio this morning Dennis Maley from the Bradenton Times. And how does that go, Dennis, when people want to check you out?
They need to just go to www.thebradentontimes.com, fact-based news and analysis without an agenda every day. And up in the upper left corner, they could sign up for our two free weekly emails that consolidates all the local and state news. And that comes out every Thursday and Sunday, along with my column.
There you go. And he's got a wonderful son named Solomon who's going to start a tutorial on math in the school system and completely reform education. His son is brilliant in many, many ways and way ahead of his time and all the rest. Your agenda is right now with the state, and lots of things are going on with the state and dealing with the Constitution and the shutdown of the government and the imminent situation therein. But what is your particular interest in what's going on in the state?
Well, last week we were following a piece of legislation very closely that, like many pieces of legislation, did not get to the floor for final vote because of the early adjournment by the House. And, you know, as much as people said, hey, well, they weren't going to pass a budget anyway, the reality is there was a lot of important legislation still in the pipeline that could have been resolved and gone to a floor vote. It maybe passed one chamber, not the other, and could have got to the governor's desk. So obviously the state Supreme Court found it unconstitutional, but they didn't really do anything that would prevent them from doing it again really in the future. Hopefully it's going to be the Florida taxpayer that holds them accountable for that. But when you see that, you see how completely, you know, inept this legislature seemed at times. How much difficulty they've done getting basic tasks. You know, the only thing constitutionally they're tasked with every session is passing a budget. That's it. That's the one thing they have to do in their 60-day, one-time annual session.
What's the illegal side of that coin?
The illegal side?
Well, if they have to do it, there must be a legality involved in that.
Right? Well, they obviously broke that. They have to, and they have to pass by July 1st, so they have to come back with a special session, which costs the taxpayers money as well to convey a special session. We're talking about millions of dollars. So when you look at the irresponsibility of it, and clearly for a political purpose, try to make some sort of political statement, whatever it is, you have this.
The statement is all about Medicaid.
Sure, absolutely. It came down to that one piece of legislation, but my point is there were so many other things that were impacted by it. The legislation we were following, it was actually tucked in to the one that got a little bit more political media attention this year, which was the permanent alimony bill, which was an effort to end permanent alimony in Florida and set up guidelines and formulas based on the length of the marriage, the employment of both people, and so forth. But yeah, and that's an issue in itself that may need some reform. But tucked into this, the same way as in 2013, of course, the permanent alimony passed in 2013, passed both chambers, went to the governor's desk, and he vetoed it. He vetoed it because he said, and I think with good reason, that this is retroactive. There are people that have financial expectations, have their whole life set up. They have houses, cars, kids.
And legislation would be retroactive.
In 2013, when it passed the chambers, it was retroactive. So you would have been able to go back and try to...
you could recover money depending on which side of that coin you were on.
I don't think you could have recovered it, but you could have impacted If you had been divorced 10 years ago and were paying permanent alimony, you could have went back and applied to have that end there. Not necessarily get the money back, but you could have it end. The new one this year would not be retroactive. It would only be people who get divorced going forward. However, the tucked into it was a custody stipulation that basically, now Florida redid custody in 2009. They had some landmark legislation. We were kind of antiquated and backwater prior to that. We did in 2009 come up with the thing with the family plans for every divorced couple that got a divorce had to submit and have an approved family plan. They had to go through a couple classes. But one of the things they've been trying to do since, now, at the same time, Florida, like a lot of other states, has moved toward a climate where 50-50 custody between two parents that want to maintain equal custody of a child. They get a divorce or one person decides they want a divorce. Remember, it's a no-fault state. So all that has to happen in Florida is one person has to say, I want a divorce. They're going to get one. The state's going to grant one. And you can't bring in and introduce the idea of whose fault the divorce was. That's never considered by the court. So whether somebody had an affair, you know, whatever the reason this person wanted to get a divorce isn't really considered. So as it's becoming more likely that, and let's, you know, we're talking about really fathers here because historically fathers are relegated into the, lesser custody role. And this goes back really 30, 40, 50 years of the time when economic opportunities for women were very, very limited. They were usually not educated or economically empowered. And it usually made more sense to the state because let's face it, if the kid's not eating, somebody's paying for it, usually the state.
They didn't want to inherit that.
Yeah, it usually made more sense to say, okay, let's keep the father as the breadwinner. Let's keep the mother as the provider. Roles of mothers and fathers in our society have arguably changed a lot. You know, the days of, you know, the father not even being in the delivery room when his children, you know, being the norm, obviously that's not the case now. You have a lot more stay-at-home dads now. You have a lot more involved fathers. So there was a movement towards, hey, if a father wants to be there, the climate in the courts was more inclined to give him that 50-50 or close to it. What they've been seeking to do is create a starting point where 50-50 is the norm. So, and it doesn't mean, it gives wide latitude, it's very prescriptive, but there's a broad list of things that a judge can consider, past behavior, demonstration of involvement in child's lives, even if the child is deemed old enough and mature enough to weigh in. There's all kinds of mitigating factors that the judge can say, we're going to deviate from this and award primary custody one parent or the other. Abuse, not only of the child, but if there's domestic violence, all these things can be considered. But what the point of the law was to say, all else being equal, okay, two fit parents, both want to remain in the child's life, there's no geographical reason, one's not living in another state or across the state or something right now, they're both living in the same town, all else being equal, if they want to do this, we start with the presumption that shared 50-50 custody of the child is in the child's best interest, and then we go from there. As a disclosure, I got divorced before even the 2009 reforms. I was able to get 50% custody of my child. Does it require a lot of commitment? It requires a long-term geographical commitment.
So you have a 50-50 relationship? Is that what you have?
Correct. My ex-wife and I share 50-50 custody of my child. He spends 50% time in each of our custody.
And who pays for everything?
It is split 50-50.
That's 50 all.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So, you know, my wife and I are in the same tax bracket. You know, the presumption was that there's no reason if we're each maintaining 50% custody, we obviously have to each have a house and a room for them and clothes from our house. You know, the only thing really that's a shared expense is medical insurance, stuff like that, which we split down the middle. Long-term geographical, you know, commitment, obviously. We both have to live in Manatee County for, you know, he was 2 years old, so it was basically saying, okay, for the next 16 years, we'll live here. If employment opportunities came up, or
you have to move out of state.
Yeah, we've each gotten, you know, laid off from positions during that time. We just both had to make it work. You know, it was never a.
Are you allowed to do that?
Are you allowed to?
Well, you're 50-50, but say you move out of state, one of you has to move away for a job.
Right, you would have to petition the court, and they would be unlikely to grant it to the person who's leaving. Less likely, I should say. All else being equal, the stability of the child, the school he's in, everything like that. So it's never been, in our mindset, it's always been, well, it's not an option. You know, if the company wants to transfer us, nothing we can do. We got to look for another job somewhere else. We get laid off. Somebody offers us a job, and, you know, I got an offer a job in Wichita once. Sorry, not even within the realm of possibilities. So that's the kind of mindset you have to have, is that, you know, this comes first. You know, raising your child and maintaining this, and neither one of us are going to abandon them. So it just, it never even became a factor. So there are things like that, and you have to work a schedule that allows you to do that. But it can easily be done. And I can tell you firsthand, I think, from my experience, every time I've seen a child without one of their parents in a primary role in their life, I've never seen it work well for the child. I've never thought, wow, that child really thrives with one child, you know, one parent having left them. But when you look at it now, you can have, and I'm going to take it from the father's perspective because I've seen it more, but I'm not going to say it can't happen the other way. You can have a woman decide, again, it's a no-fault state, she decides, okay, I'm leaving my husband. She divorces him. She gets, you know, let's say primary custody, and he gets, you know, every other weekend and every other Wednesday or something like that, and he's paying child support because she's a primary custodian. She can meet someone else. She can move in with that person. He's going to, as long as they don't get married, well, marriage will only affect alimony, he's going to continue to pay child support. And essentially, someone else gets to take over his role as the primary male father figure in the life. You know, somebody else, 70% of the time,
so
is in that
your
role.
Bonding becomes broken. And
that's what the state used to encourage.
Right.
When I got divorced, it was almost like they encouraged the female to have almost primary custody.
Mm-hmm.
And there are all kinds of games that were played.
Mm-hmm.
My ex-wife gave to my brother a .22 caliber gun and says, he has a gun, he might shoot me. And I lost complete custody of my kids. It took me months in order to see my kids at all.
Mm-hmm.
It was criminal what occurred. I had never hit her. I was never drunk. I didn't have an affair. All this stuff occurred. And simply, it was great for the lawyers. It was very expensive for me. It was terrible for my children. My son eventually ran away from her over and over and over again until they gave me custody. And I had to pay for even that. I still had to pay child support even though I had my son. The whole thing was just a farce. It was wonderful for the lawyers. It was terrible for the father. It was terrible for the kids. But that's what the state wanted. And it was just, I'm so happy for this change of the law. It's a lot more fair.
Well, we haven't got there. So this past...
Well, it is right now if they're seeking 50-50. At one time, it was just the onus was on the father.
I agree with you 100% in that the climate's changed, but we're still not at the part where we start at 50-50 as a presumption. And as much as... And my point is that it shouldn't come down to the luck of the draw with a judge. Like I said, you're more likely than ever. If you're a father, especially in Florida, you are more likely than ever if you're... good person, you know, no criminal record, and you want to maintain a relationship with your child and you want to be in his life, you're more likely to get 50-50 than you ever were before. However, there are still cases and there are still some judges that err towards that old school mindset, and there are cases where a father is basically taken out of his life. And, I mean, there are cases where a woman leaves a guy for another guy, right? She instigates a divorce. It's a no-fault state. It's not even a factor. And she's maybe she has an affair while they're married, and then she leaves him for that guy, and then that guy's the primary, you know, male role model in his life. So he's not only wrecked his marriage and stole, you know, his wife, he's pretty much stole his fatherly role as well. And there's something inherently wrong with that, just from, you know, an equitable society. But we can't, again, I go back to, I think, and what we found, I think why we moved, is what we found is back in that era that you're talking about, there's a broad body of evidence that suggests, hey, this isn't good for the kids. You know, that these people who grow up with a tremendous amount of anger and resentment and trust issues.
But if you had to fight for custody, it was great for the lawyers,
yeah,
and great for the legal system, and meant a lot more money into the coffers of the wrong people. And it just, at least today, I think it's a little bit more equitable.
I think we got to get there.
It's not there.
So this bill was tucked into the movement to end permanent alimony. And it passed, the House passed a version that the Senate wasn't as strong on the 50-50 presumption. It was very vague. The Senate's was very prescriptive. The House passed it right before they adjourned. The Senate didn't take it up, and of course there was no opportunity to try to compromise on it. And that's, again, this is an example of many issues that walking out early slammed the door in legislation that could have got passed. And remember, we have what's called a part-time legislature. We have one 60-day session, barring a special session, we have one 60-day session a year. The idea that you're going to close the door early and say they never get enough done. There's always, unfortunately, important issues, the ones with less moneyed constituents, less powerful lobbyists, that just fall by the wayside every year. Good legislation that just dies on the vine because we're more worried about, well, what are we going to talk about with gambling? Or what are we going to talk? And this year it was really dominated by this political football of Obamacare and the Medicaid expansion, and it was really politics at its worst.
Well, right now you've got two divided parts. One, the House being the ones who walked out and shut that part down, and the Senate who wants to go ahead and bring their version of Medicare expansion under Gardner, who represents his background as the hospitals. And the Senate districts are larger than the House districts. But the one thing that's come into play is the Koch brothers. I forget what the organization that they've used to help finance the current legislature on the House side especially, and also on the Senate side. But there's a big division. Tom Lee, from what district he's in, he's a senator, is in very serious disagreement with the House. But they're going to the Gardner's plan is what he's hinted at, is the tax cuts that Scott's has been proposing are going to go away for property tax. And they're going to use that as a hammer on the House to bring them around to at least the plan that the Senate is offering. So what's going to happen, June 30th being the end date of any kind of whatever, Chris DeFooley is the hard-nosed leader on this whole thing. They've done the same thing in Kansas, and I forget the others, three states, and three governors are acting in concert right now through the Koch brothers' direction, and they're directing our government right here in Florida on this matter. So what you're after on this very serious matter is probably going to get shoved under the rug.
Oh, absolutely. That won't come back again until next year. And I think what we'll get in the Medicaid bargain is we're going to get a watered-down version of the Senate. That's going to get loosened even more. It's going to be a voucher plan. And we're going to move towards something that's not going to help the average Floridian. And here in Manatee County, we have a special relationship with this legislation because the argument they're using is the step down. They're saying, oh, well, yeah, they're paying 100% of it at first, but, you know, we have no idea how much it's going to cost. Well, newsflash, in politics, you never know what something's going to cost long term. Anybody that says they do.
They know one thing. The federal government will not come through with this money, don't you know? And that is such hogwash.
Well, it starts with the step down. And then you look at it and you say, we have about, I think there's four studies now at this point, credible nonpartisan studies that have shown, even with the step down, even once it goes down to 90% federal coverage of the expansion, you're saving money because of duplicative programs at the state and local level that will no longer be necessary once these people are covered under the umbrella. Duplicative and more expensive. All of these programs, less than Medicaid, are less expensive than Medicaid because Medicaid has the most negotiating power to have the reimbursement rates be the most cost equitable. You look at it and you say, Manatee County's trying to say, what are we going to do for indigent care? What are we going to do for indigent care? Let's tax the people with a sales tax, $23 million a year. Look at all these counties trying to do that. Those are the duplicative programs you're talking about.
Yep.
So you're going to pay for it. So do you want to pay for it in new taxes? Or do you want your own tax money you've already sent to Washington to come back and pay for it? So this idea that, it won't pay for itself, well, then we'll be paying for it somewhere anywhere.
Well, logic has not been part of this.
No, it has not. This has been a completely political issue.
The House has said, well, Obamacare is the evil.
Right, right.
Even though it's for profit, the insurance companies are still involved in making money off of insurance.
Right.
They sell the health care that's called ACA or Obamacare. If you have an interest in this conversation or adding to it, 941-745-1490, you're welcome to talk to Dennis or ourselves and offer your ideas, your thoughts on the strong issue that Dennis is bringing forward. Coming back to this, Dennis, we've got these hopeful things like a need of change for what your concerns are, that people are being shoved under, men especially, are being shoved under the rug, and children right along with it. You have the situation of the positive of the hope of Port Manatee to have a connection of the two embarking places in Cuba, only two, and one really, the only one being opened up, being competed for. I think there's out of Miami and two or three other places, Jacksonville, all wanting to get into that port, this being the closest one to it. There's hope on that horizon. You've got the situation in this area, and I asked you before the show, you report primarily on Bradenton. And actually, Bradenton, Manatee and Sarasota County are really somewhat one region.
Mm-hmm.
Chicago had to pay $5 million to victims of abuse. There was a police chief in Chicago who went to jail for perjury because they couldn't convict him on the out-of-date torturing that he had done people. And they paid $5 million. $500 million over time they paid out in the bad action of police. Now you have in Sarasota County indifference thing. There's a thing called indifference, and you allow someone to die. And this guy was supposed to get EMS, and the police in Sarasota County basically told EMS to go away, and the guy died. And he finally got to go to the hospital way too late. So we got this sort of thing going on, these different factors. Dennis, you're writing the Bradenton Times. So have you ever considered the wider net?
Well, we have. We've actually, the Sarasota Times has been on our radar for a long time. We put the domain aside. And it's a struggle in the independent market, you know, so when there's the resources available, we do have a lot of readership in Sarasota County, you know, that follows the state and national things and then, you know, just looks to see what's going on in Manatee County once in a while, because like you said, there's a lot of synergy between the two communities. But, you know, so it's always on our radar, but it's a very difficult nut to crack in the independent, news market. You know, the advertising, the revenues are not what they used to be. And it's something we would definitely like to do, but it costs money. That's
well,
the answer.
So many people in the market anymore for journalism, if
sure.
you will. It's hard to know what a journalist is.
Right.
Anybody who picked up the microphone.
Right. That is difficult. You know, you do have all, it's become easier. It's kind of like when a printing press first came out. And, you know, people were able to start little, you know, newsletters and pamphlets. It takes a long time to build a reputation. You know, I've been with the Bradenton Times. I just had my 5-year anniversary recently.
Oh,
and thank you. And, you know, during that column that I kind of wanted to reflect on it, you know, I kind of took a minute to look at some of the things we've impacted. And we have become a very important part of the news fabric in Manatee County. There were a lot of times when the school district was being, you know, put up on a pedestal by the other major publication, and being said things couldn't be better, and there were a lot of people saying, no, there's, you know, there's something wrong, they're cooking the books, and we were the only ones showing that, and eventually it came out. When the indigent healthcare tax was there, and you had, you know, these special interests that were pushing this as something that it wasn't, we were the only ones that gave a real honest look at this is what this means. When the Long Bar Point development was being attempted to have it much more aggressively developed in this coastal high hazard area in a flood zone, and on important environmental wetlands, you know, we were right there in the front lines giving a different side of the story that wasn't coming out. So it's taken about, you know, 3, 4, 5 years to get that reputation and earn the trust of the community, and I think we've become a platform that a lot of people go to and say, okay, I at least want to get that other perspective. And I think what we've also done is kept the other larger, you know, corporate conglomerate publications more honest. We've been able to say, hey, you can't ignore this. You know, hey, why are they saying this over here? You don't have anything in your paper about it. Or, you know, how could you say it like this when there's this clearly this other side to it? So you see their kind of coverage move a little bit more toward the middle. You know, so it's been important. I think any time you have a situation where anybody has the platform to themselves, that's dangerous. I don't care if they even have the best intentions, because the public then, you have a lot of control over information, and the public gets a skewed perception that, hey, this is the way things really are because this is all I hear. There were a couple great efforts at launching, you know, independent media in Sarasota, and they've been met with the same challenges. So they haven't been able to be successful. There was that good one that went out of business recently that did the like PDF that was made to read on tablets and stuff like that.
You got me.
It'll come to me in a second, but and they had a couple.
St. Peter's blog has taken off, and
that has. That's a slightly different market. And, you know, Peter Rorsch is a very politically connected person.
He's actually hiring people.
He's been able to do something
Mitch Perry went to work for him.
Right.
Other people have gone to work for him.
Yeah, he's been able to do something on a scale even a little bit bigger than ours in an online only in a little bit bigger market. So I think it shows that's where the future of it is. But that's still, you have to look at Augie. It's still important to see that those are, at best, supplements. Yeah, and we always seem to say that. It wouldn't be a good thing if Written Times was the primary news source in Manatee County because we don't have enough resources. And when you look at papers that used to have 75 people in the newsroom side, right, and we have, you know, 4, 5, right, we can kind of reflect what's going on with those larger things, but we can't do very expensive 3 and 4 reporter investigative journalism, some of the most important work that can be done. We have to sometimes piggyback on work done in other places and comment on it and add to it, you know, or dig a little deeper, maybe give a different perspective, like I said. But the shrinking newsroom is becoming the future of it. A lot more opinion, a lot more commentary, a lot less information, and unfortunately, the reader is validating that. The reader's saying, I don't really want to do the hard work of reading what happened at the meeting last night or what's coming up at the next meeting. I just want to hear somebody kind of vent and tell me who the bad guy is and tell me who the good guy is, and they tend to just pick one of those voices and believe everything they say, and that's never a good thing either.
We're coming to a break. After the break, I'm going to raise an issue from some time back about the oil spill out in the Gulf, and I was at two different press events at that time when I did my television show. So we'll come back after the break then.
We have been speaking with Dennis Malley, the editor of the BradentonTimes.com, and we will be back in 1 minute.
Sarasota is home to a true gift, the Posture Clinic of Sarasota, with Dr. Mark D'Amato, 4450 South Tamiami Trail. Dr. D'Amato is a veterinary chiropractor treating horses, dogs, or your favorite four-legged friend. First and foremost, animal chiropractic care is not intended to replace traditional veterinary medicine. Complementary care is a type of care that works with your vet and certainly not instead of them. To find out more information, call Dr. Mark D'Amato at 941-927-7009. That's 941-927-7009. Oh, and by the way, Dr. Mark treats two-legged patients, too.
And we are back at the Morning Edge. We are speaking with Dennis Malley of the BradentonTimes.com. If you'd like to call and talk with us, have part of our conversation, give us a call at 941-745-1490.
When I did my television show for 7 years on Comcast, it's called The Edge. I'm looking at the legal side of that because the titling of that goes back to 2000, and now there's a program called The Edge on CNBC, and I'm going to talk to an attorney about that. How can they do that? It's the same identical name. In any event, there was two events, one in St. Pete at the Coast Guard, and the other one was at Moat Marine, and the one in Moat Marine was with Senator Nelson. And I listened to the press questions, which practically were nothing, and most of the young people that were there were in their early 20s or thereabouts, and I waited patiently for somebody to ask something serious about what to do about that exploding well and the oil flowing therein. And first in St. Pete, and I stood up and I said, look, I said, Norway, Russia, they have these things all the time. They have a very simple solution. They blow the damn thing up and let the earth fall back on it and collapse the whole business. And boy, the scrambling around that. I says, it's on the internet, you younger people. You can Google that. And I'm just an interviewer for authors and things like that. I'm not supposed to be, and I didn't go to journalism school. But there again, it's called the school of education that's in the world. I said, I read a great deal. I inform myself. I don't wait for somebody to tell me what to write. But they're still silent. Nothing happened. But the people answering that question were scared to death because that was their tie-in. Was with the dispersants at that time on the oil to cause the oil to sink out of sight, which is what was going on. There's still, only out of the $20 billion of proposed restoring of the losses of people, only about $4 billion have been handed out. So I come down to Mount Marine and Senator Nelson's there, and I ask him the same, oh, you can't do that, it won't work, and then it'll make it worse, and da-da. I mean, these people got, in both cases, were frantic to try to cover the status quo, to keep it right where it was, going on and on and on. It was a month later before they actually got the thing stopped. So Dennis, reporting, when you see, you get the editorializing writing that goes to some depth and does effectively example reporting.
But here's the part, is that when you say you got to do a lot of research, that's the part that starts missing when newsrooms shrink, because what are you researching? You have to have the diggers before you have the editorializers. The most important part of the news industry cycle, as it affects what I do as an op-ed columnist, are those people who go and dig. I can't go and do the first-hand research on every column. There's no way that there's enough time in the world. And as that starts to deteriorate, because you used to have news people run newspapers. Now you have multinational conglomerate corporations, right? And you have people try to run them like an ATM machine. Newspapers, publishing houses, there's a lot of businesses that are important to society, but from a strictly investment perspective, they wouldn't exist because they take such a massive investment to net a relatively small return. You can say, hey, I could take this $1 billion and turn it into X amount more 10 different ways before Tuesday. Why on earth do I want to tie so much of it in one of these, you know, dog businesses, that barely yield anything? Well, because they're important. You know, that used to be the thinking. You had citizens who said, you know, this is a national treasure. You know, this is the news media is part of democracy. It's essential to it. You can't have it without it. And they accepted that, hey, it's not a profitable thing, but it's important. Now you're starting to get away from that. You're saying, well, look, if we have this much money and people, you know, and the unfortunate part is a lot of it comes back in the reader. If it's, you know, naked homeless guy bites police officer, the worst thing that happened to us in this industry was as it became more and more digital, we had more and more metrics to measure the success of articles. And it was the most disappointing thing you'd ever want to see, Augie, because you started realizing all the stuff you thought people read because you got letters to the editors about, you were really dealing with a small, serious group of readers who paid close attention and were motivated enough to write in and get excited about stuff and be involved, take the article to the county commissioner or the city council, and I read this, and you know, I want answers. Then all of a sudden you realize, wow, there's a lot more than them, though, that just read the term I use for it is mental masturbation. You know, it's something that doesn't take any kind of critical thought. Doesn't goes right in, goes right out.
It takes more time, mental masturbation.
Exactly. So, a naked homeless guy bites cop is going to get 20,000 clicks. You know, alleged bid rigging in school district is going to get 1,200. And which one's more important to our society? Which one do we, you know, so when the MBAs look at that and they say, well, it took us three reporters working on this 2 weeks to get 1,200 clicks, and it took you 20 minutes on a police report over here, an intern, to get this, you know, clickbait, what we call it, article up. When I go to the advertiser, you know, these are the numbers I got to show them. So do I want 20 of these 20,000 clicks, or do I want, you know, five of these 1,200 clicks? What does it matter to me? The advertiser doesn't pay me because we're saving the world, you know?
Yeah,
survival. So, and that's become, so you look at sites like TMZ, wildly profitable. Huffington Post is on the news industry chart, still shades it more over to that side than, say, the New York Times. The market is rewarding that salacious, just what we call clickbait, you know, put it out there and hope somebody clicks. The market's rewarding that. As that ground level news that maybe doesn't get read that much goes away, what you realize is the analysis gets worse too, because it's not as informed as it was when there are that many more resources out there to drive your opinion from.
Now, you mentioned in another conversation about millennials. How do they fit into this?
Well, we had an interesting thing happen last week. It was just part two of a presentation.
Now, what is a millennial for the audience?
Well, that has been, I guess, you know, it's hard to define, you know, who's Generation X and Generation Y. And now the next one that people are calling are millennials. And what they mean by millennials, they say, are people who were born around 2000. You know, slightly before, slightly after. So you're people who are coming of age, you know, right now. This is the young professionals, 22, 23.
1990 or so.
Yeah, that's probably the cusp of it, you know, 1990 to 2000. So you look at it and you see these people now that are coming out of college. A lot of times, you know, you look at the underemployment rate now, it's at a historic high. So you have people with college degrees having to put together two part-time jobs, not working in their field, not working in a job that requires a college degree, increasingly taking on historic debt levels to get that degree. And now they're getting out and they're realizing, hey, you know, we want our stake in the world too. And we don't see much in this modern society in a lot of communities that's for us. And so we heard his presentation. Now, the presentation, you had to take with a grain of salt because it was led by county employees. So they work for the county administrator, so it's going to be tempered to a certain degree, because as we know in Manatee County, if you are a squeaky wheel, you don't tend to get the grease, you tend to get gone. We've seen that. We've lost a lot of institutional knowledge in our county government's administration because people haven't kind of been on script with the pro-development, pro-move-forward, don't ask any questions, do it this way. But anyway, we heard from people saying, hey, we're seeing too many kids our age moving to places. St. Pete's the one that keeps coming up. They're moving to St. Pete. They're moving away from here because everything's geared towards retiring boomers. You're building big, expensive houses out in the urban fringe, and you're not doing anything with the places to incentivize development or investment in the places that could be the affordable workforce housing for us. And they were throwing out a lot of numbers, and people were saying what they're paying for rent. You know, in Manatee County, it is typical for a very modest three-bedroom house in a very modest neighborhood, no pool or anything, not the best neighborhood, maybe a real old one up in northwest Manatee or something, very typical to pay about $1,200 a month in rent. So when you crunch the numbers and say, you know, these people are making $26,000 a year, and maybe they're living with a young married couple or couple living together or a couple roommates, and they're looking at it and saying, what about when I'm ready to start a family? What about when I'm ready to, you know, make the next step in my life? How am I ever going to afford the $300,000 house they're building down the road? And short of that, what else is there in the sub-150 market? And when you look at places like Bradenton and the surrounding areas, we're letting the urban core decay. We're letting it just crumble in place. And you have communities like Rabonia, just north of Palmetto, over 100-year-old fishing community, beautiful place, hardworking people. Most of them have lived their entire lives. And they're saying, why can't we get sidewalks? Why can't we have streetlights? You know, where I live in Northwest Manatee County, Augie, there's houses on my block that have been built. The first one was, I believe, 1915. The one across the street from me, I know, was 1926. So an old neighborhood. Okay,
that's pretty old.
Yeah, but guess what? We have sidewalks on my side. Half of the street has a sidewalk. On the other side, half of it has a sidewalk. There are no street lights around the corner on both sides. There's a street light, so my kid can't ride his bike without going in the street. There is no way to navigate even a three-block ride on sidewalks. And if it's past dusk, nobody can see him outside. And I can't even look out and see him
until
he gets around the corner. Yeah, yeah. So you look at that, it's in 100 years. And so the false promise we've had all this time, when you go out and say, hey, why do we keep making this density out here, and the traffic's getting so bad, and we're building all these houses, and we're overburdening our roads, we don't have enough schools, which, by the way, we're not collecting school impact fee taxes for, or fees off of the developers for, so now we're being told we have to build new schools out in Parrish and Ellington, and there's no money for it, so they want more tax money from us. Where's all this promise? What we were told, well, is growth is good. This is going to increase your quality of life. What you don't understand is all these houses have to pay taxes, and they increase in the tax base. But every time the sheriff comes before the county commission at the budget meetings and says, hey, all these new areas we have now, we have more crimes down, but we have more calls for service than ever. And we have more miles to patrol. And we really need a new substation out there in the northeast part of the county because there's so many houses and so many calls.
You've got police, you've got fire.
You've got EMS. You have EMS coming out and saying, meeting with some people this week to do a follow-up in a piece that I do. They're still making 10-something an hour. And they're saying, we don't have enough, and we're taking extra shifts, and we're being on the road, and the ambulance is too long. Well, we don't have any money for that. We don't have any money for the sidewalks. We don't have any money for the sheriff. You don't understand. In these economic times, we don't have money for. Where is all of this economic impact we've been promised?
I can only cite what they do in Sarasota County. I'm more familiar with them. I have been somewhat familiar with what goes on here, and it does. It's the same in both counties. Developers run the county commission.
Absolutely, sure.
And is growth good, or is campaign contributions from developers good?
What have we actually gotten from it? What we've gotten from it as a whole is more traffic. I mean, when you look at Manatee Avenue or Cortez, those two main arteries going through, western Manatee County, when you try to get through there during any time between 7:30 in the morning and 9:10 in the afternoon, and then 3 and 6 later in the day, it is difficult.
Who says it's better? I mean, who says it's better?
That's
my point. Who are taking the campaign contributions.
Right,
that's
right.
All that it
so
is.
So you sit through two or three cycles at the red light, and trying to get out to Cortez. You know, you're going to put all these houses here along Bar Point. You're going to put the other ones in the old tomato fields. Trying to get out to... Why do you think they're building
and
over
high
there?
High-rises along the coastline. It's
right.
Just absurd.
Why do you think they're building out there? We want to be close to the ocean. So
yeah.
Add that many more cars going over there every weekend. And you know what the county commission told the people when they came and complained about traffic? Mm-hmm. Get used to it.
That was the attitude.
Get used to it. Mm-hmm. We're going to have more traffic.
They think that's a sign of their success.
Mm-hmm.
There's been an underground plan that's been talked about. That we're going to build the spine of Florida by building along all the interstates, all the way
right.
up north and south, and fill up all that land on both sides, and we'll have growth. And so when the next economic crash comes, all those high values fall through the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Who gains from that? The banks.
Yeah.
Who finances your campaigns? The developers and the banks. Who runs the county commissions? Developers and the banks. So this is all a game to keep the cycle going and don't worry about children. It's old people live here anyway. That means health care, all that sort of thing is the only game in town. And any kind of...
We don't want to diversify that either. We don't want to do anything to keep the brain drain from having those smart young kids just going off somewhere else.
We don't want them here because they raise too many questions.
Right, right.
And the old plantation mentality was exactly about that.
Yeah.
That's what's never gone away. The social conservatives were running the South. In the Democratic Party has shifted over to the Republican Party.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same clowns that are running things now that ran it before. That kept
just with a different with an R instead of a D, right?
Yeah, with a different hat on. And the only thing that saved the South to become somewhat part of the United States was the interstate highway system. What's missing, the big link, which was planned originally interstate transport, was the rail.
Mm-hmm.
Was supposed to be up the center of that highway system. They don't want that because now and then our clown governor made sure that got killed early on, the beginning of that. That was from Tampa to Orlando or vice versa. And that parking lot called the I-4 corridor is being loaded up with Hispanics. So this, I think, eventually, at some point, is going to backfire because as the Puerto Ricans move from Puerto Rico to that area, and they've added 100,000 or more people in 4 or 5 years because the population there is primarily that. That flood is like a new tsunami about to hit.
Well, the message is, and this is what I said to in the Sunday's column to the millennial group, is you've got to do more than present. You've got to, one, this only works if a large body of the constituency isn't paying attention, isn't voting, casting an informed vote, and isn't demanding something different. The money in politics, the developers owning them, it only works if you let it. If everybody's paying attention, the money in politics doesn't work.
Well, right now we've got two Democratic parties, one in Manatee, one in Sarasota, that in my opinion are may as well be in the pocket of the developers by doing nothing, next to nothing. I mean, here you get somebody elected to the county commission, one Democrat, in Sarasota, none to the county commission, a couple to the city commission, and the effect of an opposition to anything else in an organized way, with any energy, with any youth in it, is not likely.
Yeah, and that's one of the things you keep by not, you know, they don't want this to become St. Pete. They don't want to have young, intellectual, informed, active people, because like you said, that's inconvenient. They ask the wrong kind of questions that you don't have easy answers for. What the Manatee County Commission will constantly fall back on and say, listen, what you guys don't understand out there is, you know, there is something called the Burt Harris Act, and there is, you know, property owner rights, and, you know, by law, we can't, you know, deny that. You don't have to amend your comp plan every time they ask. You don't have to approve a development order that's not consistent with your comp plan. You don't have to give all these exceptions and say, yeah, we know it's a flood area and it's a coastal high hazard, and that's a lot of cars you're going to be putting in there. And, yeah, if there's a hurricane, it might be tough for everybody to get out, but we understand in this economic market that those, you know, two houses on every acre or three houses, that's just not going to be profitable. So, okay, we can go with four. We just had another big one you're going to see on Palmasola Boulevard. So if you're going out Manatee Avenue towards the beach, that very last left turn you can make, it's the last one that connects Manatee and Cortez, and it's a beautiful road. There's a couple of nice churches on the way down. There's a nice little county small dock that people can cast a kayak off of, have a picnic there. It's beautiful. It ends down there by Ace's Lounge. And they've just approved in a rather large development that where the houses are going to be, the tops are going to be over 40 feet high. They've just approved six more getting stuffed into this little development because it just wasn't quite enough yet. And, you know, this was an exception they gave. So, you know, you look at this, you know, all these people showing up saying, look, this isn't consistent with this neighborhood. This isn't what we put our life savings into. And having these gargantuan 40-plus foot houses in front of ours isn't what we came this close to the water for. Too bad. You know, that's what they're being told over and over. We're developing that coastal area and that what they call the urban fringe, that outlying those rural hamlets that were agricultural for so long, or pastoral-type housing developments, one house every 5 acres with free-range chickens. Some people have cattle out there. They're saying, no, we're gonna keep subsidizing the cost of those houses. We're going to keep making it cheaper than it should be with no impact fees, no half-road impact fees, all those things that we're going to drive down that cost to disincentivize anybody from coming back and reinvesting in the urban core. Why would they? It's always easier. And this goes back, this is symbolic of our throwaway society, Augie. We have this mentality of cheap goods from China. That's how we build houses.
Well, we confuse, you, when you just said something interesting, cost.
Yes, cost, you're right.
Right, they throw the word cost
right
out there, and that people think, well, maybe they're saving us the cost.
Yeah.
No, they're not. The us they're talking about are those developers.
It's always easy for a developer to look at a piece of green grass with
right
nothing on it, okay, and say, well, if the county's going to run pipe out to here, and they're going to run sewage out to here, and they're going to build roads out to here, then why wouldn't I build it on this big, grassy, old farm rather than go into, you know, a brownfield or go into some urban infill area where there's, you know, not quite as much land assembled all together, and I might have to use storied parking garage, which is a lot more expensive than just a big wide open parking lot that I could put out here. So if I'm going to do a shopping mall or even a grocery store, why not put it out there east of the interstate by State Road 64 or something, where I could just build it, put a drainage ditch, you know, retention pond in, and that's it. It's a lot less expensive. Well, as long as you let it be, as long as you make the incentive that, hey, go ahead. But if you put a value on your pristine, undeveloped green grass, where, let's face it, all these, you know, openings, you know, the problems that we're having with our water, and then we're having these giant, you know, collapses in the earth because we're sucking so much out from the aquifer. When you're looking at it and saying, where does it get back in? Where do these things go? So where does the water get back into those ledges of the aquifer? Through the ground. Well, the less of it that's green and the more of it that's black, the less place there is for it to soak back down, and the more chance there is going to be that runoff reaches where? The Gulf, and gets in where sea level is already rising. So if you put the emphasis and say, listen, there is a price. There is a tremendous cost to turning this green field into a parking lot. There's a tremendous social cost to that, and we're going to reflect it in how we zone. And there's a tremendous incentive to redeveloping the urban core. But if you make it, hey, it's old, there's crumbling infrastructure, the pipes are old, if you make it all else being equal, they're going to build on the grass every time. But like you just said, that's not the true cause. It's not, sure as heck isn't cheaper for the society. It won't be cheaper for our kids and grandkids, but it will be a lot cheaper for the developer.
Do we really care about that?
No, we only care about them when we talk about the national debt.
Yeah,
isn't it funny?
Exactly.
How we say, I won't do that to my grandkids. We're going to raise the debt, and we're going to saddle them with that. But you don't care if you're going to leave them with an earth that doesn't function anymore. Then it was, we don't want to talk about that.
Down in Sarasota, Manatee are two interesting counties because at one time, Manatee County wisely got federal money that is so condemned by these so-called conservatives. And they got
that's always funny, too, because they always say, we're not paying anything for this. There's no your property taxes are going from. We're not using tax money. What do you get? We got federal funding for it. What is federal funding?
The water sewer system of Manatee County was totally paid for by the federal government.
And if they paid for it, what does that mean? You paid for it, right?
Well, of course you did.
But there is no such thing as
Sarasota County, they were really smart. To this day, they turned it down. And they had more water districts than any other county in the entire state. And the worst peat situation, which means water will not get through to the aquifer or anything else. It just floods right away in a major storm or a heavy rainstorm. So what they did back about 15 years ago, they ran a water sewer system down 41 from Bee Ridge Road south to Clark Road out to a dump. So all the adjoining land for the developers was authorized. So then the fire, the EMT, all the rest of the stuff, EMS, all that stuff went on the board and on the tax rolls right away and did this to enhance the five-acre plots.
Mm-hmm.
Since that time, now they've done what you're talking
about. Right,
right.
Now they're
exactly
three-per-acre, yeah.
To this day, about 15 to 20% of the urban core still has not got water sewer, still is sitting on septic and well.
Septic, yeah, absolutely. And when you look at that in Sarasota and you see how crazy that is, how close to the center, how
proud,
urban they
though,
are,
Dennis.
And they're
they
on
are
septic.
Proud. We are conservatives. What the hell is a conservative? A jackass with a trunk? I mean, you know. I don't know what that is, but it's an amazing situation how locally we do this stuff and the people suffer. But I think it just goes to the education system because we don't really educate the kids down here. There's no civics. There's no understandings that you provide, that we try to provide here. None of that is happening. So the people can't question because they don't read and they don't know.
Right.
And the Internet doesn't solve it. And
no.
Now Morning Joe this morning announced that we're going to hack the Internet so that the ISIS will not be able to reveal all these terrible things that they do all the time. Well, all you have to do is have a roving drone over Saudi Arabia, and the same thing goes on all over Saudi Arabia. Every day there are hangings, burnings, stonings, all that Sharia law stuff, which is really Moses' law anyway. All this stuff is happening as we speak. And this is our friend, by the way. This is the people that are now bombing in Yemen, starting a sectarian war in the Middle East because they're afraid of our relationship with Iran, which is a more moderate version of Islam. So here we have the uneducated following the stupids. And when you and I and others argue the logic of this thing and people say, well, I didn't know that. Well, I didn't know that. Oh, my gosh, I didn't know that. And you get that a lot. Well, you're making that up. You and I are making this up.
We don't have as big of a microphone, so it can't be true, right? And you know, people say all the time, I get most of my news off Facebook. I click on something that somebody else posted. They're being intellectual lazy with it. You've got to, we're going to end up either, taking advantage of the information that's out there, or we're going to get what we deserve. You know, it takes a little bit of work, though.
Garbage in and garbage out.
That's right.
Well, hey, Dennis, this is great. We missed you on Friday. I hope the people who missed you and said so on Friday that they were looking forward to your thing. We will hopefully see
you. I appreciate that. I was judging elementary school speech contests all last week, and double book myself, but I'll tell you, that was impressive to see some of those young minds out there with that great public speaking in fourth and fifth grade.
And we missed you, but you should not have missed that.
It was impressive. It gives me a little bit of hope when I see these young kids doing these great things that we're going in the right direction.
Bring some to the studio.
You got it.
And your son, is, of course. Dennis Maley, thank you so
much. Thanks, guys.
Okay.
You may be right, I may be crazy.